Good afternoon, everyone. In my traditional family house, I would say Dobro den, which is hello in Macedonian. On the lands of the Ngambri and the Ngunnawal peoples, we would say Buri Guri. In other customs, we would say hello, good afternoon. What I love about Australia is that we have so many different opportunities to connect with our culture. And my mother is from the northern part of Greece called Macedonia, and my father is from the southern part of Macedonia, and that in itself is a conundrum. My family made their way here from the early 1950s and made their home here, and they were farmers. And they taught me about respecting land and respecting the things around us and to appreciate the things that grow and the things that prosper. And strangely, I use those things I've learnt as the custodian of the National Collection, because the National Collection is something that needs to be nurtured. It needs to be looked after. It needs to be reviewed. It needs to be developed. It needs to be opened up and discussed in the same way that nurturing the land does. And I think that it's a great privilege and responsibility to look after the National Collection. And I regularly say to people that it's certainly not an honour. It's a great responsibility. It may be an honour afterwards. But while you're in the chair, it means that the National Collection is there to enrich the lives of Australians. And the Parliament made a really dynamic decision in the early 70s to do and set up a National Collection. And for more than 100 years, the states collected art from Europe, from America, and from Australia, but there was no true national collection that went beyond the state borders. And this Parliament, sorry, not this Parliament, but Parliament, made that strident decision to start collecting. And in 1971, hired a director to start assembling the National Collection. And then in 1982, after nearly 11 years of collecting, the National Collection opened. And it was quite a bold move. The Lindsay Report, which Parliament commissioned, made the point that we should leave the historical collections to the states because they'd spent over 100 years collecting them. And the National Collection should focus in on bringing the best of the world to Australia that focused on the 20th and the 21st century and exploring the rich history of Australian art that went beyond state borders, looking at Australian art from a truly inclusive perspective, looking at the work of First Nations artists and the work of non-Indigenous artists, and bringing them together to ensure that Australians had access to the best art available. And we've assembled the collection of 155 works of art. So how do you put it to work? How do you make that extraordinary collection accessible to people? And how do you have a dialogue about what art is in the 21st century and how you have a relevance to Australia today? And I suppose that's the job that the National Gallery has, to answer those questions or try to find a way to connect with those questions. And I think one of the important things for me is to look at how we rethink history and how we revise the history of art. So if you went and picked up an art textbook published from anywhere between the 1950s to 2000, you would either see Indigenous art at the very beginning, focused on cave paintings, or at the very end as an addendum to contemporary art. And for me, it's really important that we acknowledge that art was made by both First Nations artists and the settler community that arrived here, and that we look at how the stories of conflict and the stories of things that we have in common are explored. And I think that art is continually changing because we're continually making discoveries about artists. And it doesn't matter if they made art 100 years ago or 50 years ago, we're continually learning more. And I love that part of art because it's alive and it's changing. And it's not that we alter history. We learn more about the past with time and research. And the National Collection is part storehouse. It's part research institute and it's part civic space for ideas. And the fact that we have those three roles is really critical in continuing to explore what it is to be Australian and how artists have reflected national identity. And it's really interesting to think about that in a democratic society and how we have this great opportunity to always rethink history with the knowledge that we acquire through time. So today I wanted to talk about two projects that really explored how the inclusiveness of art can have an impact on the identity of Australia. First, I want to talk about Belonging, Stories of Australian Art, which is a new project that for the first time in the National Collection hangs both First Nations art and non-Indigenous art together to weave the complicated story of Australian art history. And the National Collection previously was hung quite separate. So there was an Aboriginal section and then there was an Australian section. So these disconnections, I think, are not helpful in bringing Australia together to have a shared approach to history of creativity and a shared approach to identity. And we brought our curators together to start working on a project that helped us see Australian art from multiple points of view, and not the view of a historical text. And so our Indigenous curators worked closely with our curators that worked with our non-Indigenous collection. And for the first time, they looked at history through multiple points of view. And we start the display with a lullaby by a contemporary Australian Indigenous artist, Christian Thompson. And this lullaby is documented in the photographs behind me. He sings a lullaby, and that welcomes you in to the display from an Indigenous perspective. Performance, dance, music are such an important bedrock of art practice that we thought it was an important way of introducing a narrative through a song. A song that leads you into the exhibition called Belonging. And the exhibition juxtaposes works of art throughout time, so it's a trans-historic display, and we look at works from the 21st century and also works from the 19th century and bring them together to have a dialogue. The display starts by looking at personalities and looking at artists that define what it is to be Australian. And so the presence of Indigenous peoples is an important part of the first stage of this exhibition. And so we've taken the work of Tasmanian Aboriginal artists to welcome you to this display. And we juxtapose images of the 19th century with images of today. And so these works by Benjamin Law that document two very important figures from Tasmania, Triganini and Warrawiddy. These two heroes of Tasmanian Aboriginal culture were documented and serve as a reference point. And they're juxtaposed with the work of a contemporary artist, Ricky Maynard, looking at Indigenous peoples today in Tasmania. So what the display does do is try to put the past and the present into some context, and juxtaposing figures from different time zones is an important way of ensuring that there's continuity in the way that we see art. The display also looks at geography as an important tool to think about a sense of place. Geography from the fabric of the materials, for example, in colonial furniture, using Australian timbers, the geography of place through the work of colonial European artists, and the sense of geography from the work of Indigenous artists. And this juxtaposition here looks at two works of a similar scene, but from different points of view. We've got an image of Sydney from 1857 by Conrad Martens, a British settler, and also Napa Napa from her first visit to Sydney, looking at a similar scene. They share geography here, but they come to their subject matter from different points of view, and it's about respecting and acknowledging those different points of view. The display also looks at traditional bark paintings, and these works look at the history of trade and relationships. The work on the right, it looks at the Macassans trading with Indigenous peoples in the far north, exchange that happened before settlement here in Australia. So looking at Australia pre-settlement. And as we continue in the display, it juxtaposes geography and identity with various artists looking at those perspectives. One of the things that's been important is to use works produced in particular geographical areas to signify that Australia had an Indigenous culture that dated back some 65,000 years. And we've used important objects from geographical centres to show how both Indigenous and non-Indigenous artists have looked at geography as an important part of defining history. And in this slide that I'm showing you, you see the works of a number of British artists that arrived in the colony and documented the extraordinary geographical definitions of the Australian landscape from lots of different points of view, and also a series of Indigenous shields of similar geographical centres, and that there was this cohabitation. As you can see from these three examples, these three come from a similar geographical zone, but you see a shared love of geography and place, but three different approaches to documenting a sense of place. And it reminds us that we see things differently. And through the eyes of the artist, the experiences that we bring to creativity define who we are. The display looks at both juxtaposing two- and three-dimensional works of art. And in this image here, you see the Morningstar poles juxtaposed with silver and carving, again, that revolves around a sense of place. One of the most important elements of the 19th century was the fascination that settlers had with the wonderful flora and fauna that was here in Australia. And there was extraordinary work done in the scientific and exploration area, and the National Collection holds great journals of this work. There was a great appetite, particularly in Europe, for these exotic plants, and the National Collection shows these native species that were fascinating to settler culture. But also we look at how both early botanical studies are juxtaposed with traditional Indigenous bark paintings. And in this slide, we have watercolours from the 19th century with a series of works that look at how Indigenous artists have captured looking at the Indigenous species of this country. And what I find really heartening about this image particularly is that there's such a great attention to detail and attention to really capturing the essence of the Australian animals and plants that made up this unique country. Just a few more images of the display to see how the relationships come together. I want to just stop on this point. This slide that I've just put up looks at how grief and mourning are an important part of shared histories amongst all Australians. And we see two works that are separated by 150 years. The work of Julie Dowling from 2005 and the work of Robert Dowling from 1856. These are both mourning pictures about loss and about how we as humans have to bear loss and mourning, and how, regardless of culture and time, loss and mourning are very important elements of our cultures, and they're potent and they define us at times. In the same way that geography is really important, and you see the views of Eugene von Gerard here with two colonial views, and then two ancestral shields from the 19th century that are made in these geographical places, seeing how these two cultures have represented the sense of place through the making of these objects. One of the most potent parts of Australian art is two really extraordinary movements. And many people outside of art know these movements. They're called the Australian Impressionist Movement in the 19th century, which came out of an Impressionist history that emanated out of Paris. And Australian artists travelled to Paris and were inspired by the work of the French Impressionists. And only last year, the National Collection showed the work of Monet. And this is one of the most potent and defining elements of Australian art history, where artists went outside, they looked at the environment, and they painted the light that was Australian light, that chalky blue sky, those burnt yellows and oranges of the landscape in the middle of summer, those hazy blues, artists out making these immediate sketches of the Australian outback and also the harbour. And these images became iconic images of Australian art history. And the second really most potent movement is the Western Desert movement that came out of Papunya from the late 70s. So if there's two movements in the history of Australian art that were breakthrough moments, that were moments of absolute resolution that influenced the future, it is the Australian Impressionists and the Papunya Western Desert movements. These two movements, at their core, had a great sense of similarity. Artists from both of these eras, with more than 100 years separating them, responded to the landscape. They used colour and they used immediacy to define their views of country. And in these images that I have before you, you see the relationships. In a very cheeky and provocative move, we see these two works, 1889, Golden Summers, and Ceremonial Ground from 1981, staring off each other. At their heart, they're about a response to country. One comes from a European Western perspective, and one comes from an Indigenous perspective looking at the land and country. Both are about trying to get a sense of authenticity about the country and the landscape and the things that make up what that place is all about. It's about a response to the emotions of that place and the feelings of that place, and also trying to capture a sense of geography. The Impressionist painting looks at topography as an important element in defining that, and perspective, Western perspective, while the Indigenous work looks at the symbols of country, an aerial shot of country, and tries to define it through symbols that may at times reference a map. And what the National Collection does in bringing both Indigenous and non-Indigenous perspectives together is it tries to demonstrate that we have a rich history that shouldn't be defined by history textbooks, and that what we're trying to do is lead a progressive cultural agenda that acknowledges that art making in this country has been quite diverse, but the things that separate us aren't that far apart. That we're passionate about love, loss, and landscape, and together they form a really potent mix. And Australian art is richer for bringing a multi-point of view together to celebrate and explore Australian art. And the world looks upon us as a very curious place. And I think art can help define it, this rich history that reaches back at least 65,000 years, and the points of contact that changed history, changed our way of life as we progress, are really important moments that are captured in art. And through the eyes of artists, we see this richness that at times is full of conflict, and at times there are connection points. And I think that's an exciting part of art. And this project display at the National Collection demonstrates how we're trying to be inclusive about creativity in Australia, and how we're trying to lead an agenda that gives preferences to multiple viewpoints. And we're not rewriting history, because history writes itself. What we're trying to do is define creativity in Australia as having so many different points of reference. And I think as we progress, bringing art to the public consciousness that tries to explain our similarities and differences is very potent. And when we live in a world full of such uncertainty, there's one thing that I'm certain about, and that's the voice that Australian artists have is an important element in really defining our future, because we must make sense of the past to be able to take the next step into the future and to define who we are as Australians. Living in a democratic country means that we can explore lots of elements of who we are with a great sense of freedom, and that history shouldn't be locked away because it was defined at a particular point of view under a particular political, social and economic perspective. Now in the 21st century, my job is to make sure that history is inclusive of all parts of creativity, and that the only thing that we use as a defining should define it is excellence and innovation. If an artist builds upon something from the past and does it with a great sense of clarity and a sense of innovation in their mark making, in the voice they have, art should be elevated. And connoisseurship is such a fuzzy concept, but I always think it's a science. It's about knowing the past, defining what are the moments of breakthrough and resolution, and elevating them. And I think when we constantly are rethinking the ways that we can express the creativity in Australia, it's important that those things guide us and that we're also led by ensuring that Australia is not separated by categories, that Australia and its culture is elevated in a manner that's reflective of the way that we want to progress as a nation. And that's to bridge the gaps between understanding, to bridge the gaps between confusion, and to bridge the gaps between the things we know and the things we don't. So I hope that you might have a chance to see this project, which will have, hopefully in the future, a bigger footprint in the way that we might look at our collections and the way that we are chief storytellers through the eyes of artists. I always say that we don't publish books, we don't really do exhibitions. What we do essentially is try to tell stories from multiple points of view, and at times they could be in books and they could be in exhibitions. But ultimately, what the National Collection strives to do is to tell stories through the eyes of artists about who and what we are. A second thing that I wanted to talk about today was a project that will unfold over this year called Know My Name, which is also about reviewing how we've looked at the role of women artists in art history. And so Know My Name is a project that is about elevating the work of Australian women artists. And we'll have a major exhibition in May that looks at the contributions that women artists have made from 1900 to the present day. And you might ask yourself, well, is this just political correctness? And I like to say that when the playing field continues to be uneven, special showings are significant. And because of limitations in art schools and education, social restrictions, and the changing nature of society and the role that women have to play in a democratic society, that it's very important that we elevate the position of women artists. Women artists only make up 35% of the National Collection, and that's something that we want to focus in on. And the exhibition looks at the extraordinary contribution that women artists have made in the development of Australian art history. And this slide is a really potent slide because it's a series of self-portraits by Australian women artists. And the gaze of these women artists hopefully will encourage us to learn more about them. We started this project by asking ourselves, could you name five Australian women artists? And many people we asked that question of couldn't. So we knew this project had a role to play. And we're going to publish books. We're going to put exhibitions on in Canberra. We're going to tour exhibitions around the country. And we're also going to fly over cities. So this is the work of the Australian artist Patricia Piccinini. Canberra audiences are very familiar with her work. This work called Sky Whale was commissioned in 2013 by Robin Archer for the Canberra Centenary, and it's recently entered the National Collection. The first flying machine or aviation device that's also a sculpture to enter the National Collection. And the work is both a flying machine or an aviation craft and a sculpture, and for the first time in my career I've had to apply for an aviation license, something that I didn't think would have to happen. And we also have commissioned Patricia Piccinini to make a brand new work to make sure that Sky Whale isn't too alone, and she's in the final stages of producing a work called Sky Popper Whale, which is the male counterpart, and brings the family together, because the new hot air balloon also includes five babies that are the progeny of these two flying machines. And the two balloons will fly over Canberra, as a very contemporary modern family. And then over a series of months over Canberra, the two works will then fly across Australia and go to cities and towns that may not have a gallery. However, there's quite a comprehensive education and community learning program that will accompany this work. And the work really speaks about what a modern family is and about ecology and about nurture in the 21st century. And I look forward to seeing it over the skies of Canberra and over the skies of cities and towns that don't have galleries, because the National Collection must connect with people, and we must ensure that Australians that don't have access to regional galleries or state galleries or are in proximity or can travel to the National Collection have the ability to have art in their lives. The National Collection has to strive to be open and connect to as many people as we can. And so I'm excited that this work and the newly commissioned work will fly all around Australia, and the barriers of gallery spaces won't get in the way of people experiencing art. And one of the things I love about art in the 21st century is that there are no rules, that artists can come up with different ways of making things, and that in the 19th century, a painting or a sand drawing or a woven basket or a bronze sculpture were art. But in the 21st century, it could be a hot air balloon. And I'm excited to think what art might be in 50 years' time. I think the important thing is that the National Collection continues to embrace the bronze sculptures from the 19th century, the woven baskets, the impressionist paintings, but also the hot air balloons. And finally, in terms of democratically sharing the National Collection, last week the National Gallery launched 1,500 billboards across Australia promoting the work of 45 women artists. So this is a shot from Melbourne, the work of one of the most extraordinary artists of the 20th century, Emily Kang-Naware, from Utopia, Above a Freeway. And this and 1,499 other sites around Australia are the pop-up galleries of the 21st century of the National Collection. So I encourage you all to look out for the billboards over the next 6 weeks. And the billboards cover 82% of the population. So if you are walking past a billboard, you may well experience the work of an Australian women artist that you might fall in love with. And I encourage you to learn more about those women artists. And you'll hear more about the Know My Name project across Australia as we progress. I think that an artist like Emily Kang-Naware is perfect for this. She's not a household name, but she should be. And in 2022, the National Gallery will stage the largest retrospective of what I consider to be one of the most innovative artists of the 20th century. And I think this exhibition will certainly cause people to think differently, because it will show Emily Naware as a master of her craft and an artist that could stand up with any artist around the world. And one day I'm excited to present the work of Emily Naware next to another extraordinary figure of the 20th century, Jackson Pollock. They have about 300,000 kilometres between them and about 50 years of art making. However, they were both passionate about the marks they made, and they both leave quite a significant impact on the way that art changed after them. Ultimately, I want to see the National Collection connect with people and help us come together as a community, because, again, to mention, in times when we live in an uncertain period where the unexpected has become every day. Seeing the world through an artist helps us find a sense of peace, finds a sense of understanding. At times it might even ask us to ask more questions, but ultimately seeing the world through an artist enriches the experience of life. So I commend the National Collection to you, and I'm happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Inviting us to explore some big ideas there. So I really liked the way that you use landscape and geography to invite us to explore diverse views. We do have time for some questions, happily. We do have microphones on either side, but if someone would like the microphone brought to you, please just raise your hand. Nick, I wonder if I may have the first question, and if you've got any observations you could share with us about, is there something about political systems and democracy in particular that encourages a type of art?
Well, I think over time, and history's such a great guide, you see geographical centres that had an openness to ideas, and an openness of ideas generally, and this is a generalisation, is really defined by democratic systems. You're seeing multiple points of view, and I think that's such a dynamic part of art, that you see ideology playing out in different ways. And I think, you know, for example, in Australia, you see how the environment and gender and the issues of a post-colonial Australia being played out in lots of different forms, including music and theatre and poetry and art. And then you look at regimes that may not have an openness. And certainly, you know, you don't see issues of environmentalism or gender playing out there because of systematic controls. So I think I hope that democracy does help nurture an inclusive approach to the voices that we have. You know, I think regardless of democracies, artists will always make art that is at their heart. That's not the issue. The issue is what makes it into the public domain is really the issue. And what we see at times when political systems and structures change, you see art emerging that one is surprised about, but it's just in the underside of things. It was kept under wraps, and I think that's why art history is always changing. You see things emerging that may have not had the ability to surface because of political structures, and that's really dynamic, and I think that's one of the things that makes art and history so alive.
Thank you. Do we have a question? We do. Thank you. We've got a couple of people.
I'm just going to get my glasses.
There's someone just down here looking for a microphone, and we'll take a question from this gentleman here. Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. And I was interested in your juxtaposition of Indigenous and non-Indigenous art. Following up from your most recent comments, you talked about political expression, environmentalism, gender issues and so on. A lot of recent Indigenous art focuses on social protest and expression of social views, past repression, suicides and so on, contemporary aspirations. My question is whether you have any ideas of showing that sort of art, much of it containing words and expressions and ideas, whether you have an aspiration of showing some of that kind of art together with non-Indigenous art also taking a form of political protest or social protest.
I think it's really important that we take the pulse of art and show the best of everything. And There was a number of works that I showed there today that do that very thing. The one of the first slides juxtaposed a Glover with the work of help me out here, Brisbane. We grew here. Thank you, Vernon O'Keefe. The National Collection has a lot has a series of works that reflect the views and perspectives of certainly political and urban artists like Fiona Foley or Vernon O'Keefe, Richard Bell, there's a number of those works already on display in the National Collection. I think that certainly since post 1970, there's been a great confidence in the work of Indigenous artists from urban centres that look at the post-colonial era, and I think that those works have a potency and define a time. And it's important that the National Collection continues to collect those works and continues to make sure that there are multiple perspectives from that post-colonial era.
Thank you. I think we have another question.
Yes. Look, thanks for a motivation to go and see both exhibitions as soon as possible. This will be a few days in the gallery coming up. But my question, particularly referencing the Senate, there's a current inquiry into, I think it's something, citizenship, national identity and democracy. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering whether you're going to take the committee to the gallery, give a repeat of this lecture, show them through the exhibition and get them to restore the funding for our national institutions, which is so important to our democracy and national identity.
That's quite a politically charged question. My job is to make sure that the National Collection has the widest ability to be seen, because it has potency. The Parliament created the National Collection to help all Australians define who we are. And I hope belonging will be seen very widely. I've already taken a series of members of both houses through belonging, and over the next couple of months I'll continue to do that. And I have to say that we've had such a great response to it. I think that that when you use the language and the perspectives of artists, there's a great sense of democracy about that in itself. Because we're not forming views. We're purely reflecting the views from lots of points of view.
I think we do have another question. Do we need a microphone? Are there any final questions? If not, I hope you will all join me in thanking Nick Mitzvich very much.
Thank you. To thank you for your presence today, I've brought tickets to Matisse and Picasso. And between now and the 13th of April, if you haven't seen that exhibition yet, there are tickets available at the door. Yes, at the door when you leave today. And the tickets, as I said, are valid on any day between now and the 13th of April. So I hope you might see those two masters of the 20th century. And while you're there, also see the project exhibition Belonging, which hopes to tease out the big ideas of what it is to be Australian. So thank you very much.